Welcome to the One Within All to the Interverse podcast. I'm your host, Chance, and I hope you're enjoying the resurgence of light and life into the world as we journey once again past the equinox threshold into springtime. To begin this episode, I'd like to invite you to invoke the source and singularity of eternal life into your experience in this moment to prioritize the possibility that something in this podcast will resonate with you in a profound and enlightening way. And on that note, if the wide depth of knowledge carried by today's guest is any indication, our conversation is sure to strike several synchronistic chords. As in this episode, my good friend Sophie Fletcher returns to the show for the first time since 2020. An extremely well-educated, lifelong learner in the fields of psychology and psychosomatic healing modalities, Sophie has invested much of her life's energy in discerning and combining the most pertinent and potent keys for personal development, learning along the way to see that the body, mind, and spirit are not separate entities, which, with each of these aspects of self requiring attentive alignment in order to access true healing. With her background in depth psychology, she's also learned to read the ways in which our bodies speak through symptoms as symbols, revealing an apparent dialogue between the body's intelligence and our conscious ego, and demonstrating the body's role as our number one guide through the process of integrating the shadow and regulating the necessary balance points for maintaining a sense of power and wholeness. Along the way of training in diverse methods such as Reiki, spiritual psychology, gamma breathwork, somatic experiencing, Chinese meridian opening, and more, Sophie achieved a PhD in depth psychology from Pacifica Graduate Institute. I look forward to learning more about the variety of wisdom traditions that are synthesized in Sophie's practice with clients, and especially the awesome amalgamation of divinatory and philosophical apparatus and the ancient and modern sciences that are combined to create the human design system, which boasts an impressive combination of many wisdom traditions that serve to provide the seeker with a logical and empirical art form for distinguishing the differentiation of human bodies, both mental, physical, and energetic. For those that enjoy the fusion of psychological and astrological self-knowledge, human design seems to be the next level in comprehending the language that allows for each human being to embody their unique combination of essences that sets each of us apart. Seasoned Interverse listeners will know that this stuff is totally in our wheelhouse. And as I'm a novice to the particulars of human design, I'm excited to learn more. So let's get into it. Everybody, welcome the personal pattern perceiver and shadow hunter of the psyche, Sophie Fletcher, PhD. Welcome back to Interverse and thank you for joining me.
Thank you so much for having me. I'm gonna need a copy of that.
Gotta hype them up at the beginning.
Amazing. I love your description of everything.
I tried. I kind of fumbled a few times. But it was a good one. I'm stoked to talk.
You have two full channels off of your throat, so it makes sense. You're a wordsmith.
Okay, you've been investigating my patterns. Cool. Can't wait to hear more about that. But let's talk about you first before we dive into the makeup of your fearless leader, host, Interverse Chance guy. Tell us your journey and you know, what about your personal life and growing up do you think primed you to be interested in these subjects and take you on this path?
Yeah. you know, as everybody has, it's quite the journey of different, you know, interests and hobbies and all of that. And I was brought up in a spiritual community. So, you know, around the age of four. And I think it was incredibly helpful in terms of it kept me on the planet, because I started having really severe depression and suicidal ideation and everything starting at age three, because of certain life events and traumas and things like that. And the spiritual sort of foundation really gave me a framework of being able to stay in my body here, but also sort of dissociate in a certain way. And so I sort of say that it helped, and it also really played into my own personal way of dealing with trauma, which is through dissociation, going more into that dorsal vagal of the nervous system shutdown space. And so it was sort of a push-pull. Like, it was really, really helpful, and I'm incredibly, incredibly grateful for it. And I've had to rewire that a lot and sort of change that way of being in certain ways. So what ended up happening was that I had really always been interested in people. Like, what makes people people? What makes you different than me? What makes certain people make certain choices? Relationship dynamics, always extremely interesting to me, and just how do two people come together, or how do friends happen or groups happen, and what's happening in those dynamics. And so I ended up studying philosophy and psychoanalysis, and then did my first master's in spiritual psychology, which was still part of the spiritual community that I had been brought up in, and graduated that at 24, thinking that that was going to give me, you know, my entire life, and everything would be planned out and perfect and wonderful after I finished that degree. I certainly learned a lot and gained a lot of skills and tools, but I was still really suffering personally. And I ended up sort of in a trickery way, but in perfect alignment, ended up meeting this body worker who was an ex-Navy SEAL trained in Chinese meridian theory modalities, and his wife at the time. And they completely transformed my life in terms of, he was really based in body work. And so I started getting sessions with him, realized how much pain was in my own body that I had just been neglecting, because I thought the whole point was transcending the body and being above the body and not needing the body. And then combined with, she actually incorporated a lot of human design in her coaching work and stuff. So that was my introduction to human design, as well as more of the somatic piece. They came in together for me. And I really love how somatically based human design is. So it was like a time of getting really, really deeply into my own somatic experience, my own body, my own lived experience on this plane, on this earth, in this physical realm. And so I did that for quite a number of years. Had zero interest in doing a PhD or anything. I actually really struggled through all of school. And the Pacifica program just sort of fell into my lap. And it was depth psychology with an emphasis in somatic studies. And when I read the description, I was like, oh, it's degrees in what I'm already doing. So I was already seeing clients at this point using spiritual psychology that I had learned, but also really incorporating a lot of this body work and human design. And so I ended up going to Pacifica, doing that second master's and then the PhD. And then through that, found out about more modalities. So like somatic experiencing, I'm a somatic experiencing practitioner, and then NARM, neuroaffective relational method, and I don't know, a whole host of all other things. But I think all of it has really been driven from my own need to heal, from my own need of yearning to experience life differently than I had been. and then wanting to help others do the same. So now going really deeply into more of the nervous system work, combined with all these other pieces, it just seems to have sort of threaded together where, as you said, it's not this, oh, we're working with the mind and then we're working with the body. It's like, it's a person, you know, when I'm working with clients or speaking to people, it's a whole being in front. There's all these different energy. There's all these different connection. There's all these different parts and pieces and all of that. And how can I be as present and, really conscious with that as possible? And, so that's kind of what's driven everything in.
Yeah. You have such a diverse background in education on this stuff. And there's a few of the modalities that you talked about starting out in that I'm kind of curious what they entail, but ultimately it seems really common for psychology students to be basically in it to try to figure out how to fix themselves. I've noticed that a lot, and I'm glad that you found your way to the, you know, the truth, like that I learned really concretely from biofield tuning that the body and the mind aren't separate. The body is actually in the mind. It's not the other way around. The body is made up of mind stuff.
Yeah.
And I think that's pretty much the worst thing that like the priesthoods of the world of over the many generations ever did was convince people that there was like the spirit world and then the physical world and that these things are separate and that you're disconnected.
And one's better than the other.
Yeah. So, I mean, you have more to say about that? Because I feel like that's the biggest jive ever.
Yeah. I mean, I think that it's really that it's a disconnection from self when you're going to believe into that or go into that really deeply. And that one, again, one is better than the other. You know, if you're only body-based, that's, you know, not good. If you're just spirit-based, that's positive and good and you're closer to God. And I think there's also people who think vice versa. And I just think, again, it leaves out the totality of the human experience. And for me, it's like we're here for whatever reason, whatever shape and all of that. It's like we're in this physical experience from my perspective. And why not learn how to enjoy it to the best of our abilities? Why not learn how to experience it as fully as we can while we're in it? Because I don't personally know what happens after. I have ideas, I have teachings, I have, you know, all of that, but it's like, I don't know, I don't know for sure. What I know right now is I'm here. This body is here. I'm having thoughts. I have connections. I have all these experiences, these senses. So for me, my idea is I'm here to know this right now.
I love that. And I do, you know, accept that there's experience to be had beyond the body or outside the body in a sense, or without a body is maybe a better way of putting it. I've been out of my body before. So, you know, that's different than like inner world experiences. But every time I've ever been out of my body or think about like trying to lucid dream or times when you sort of wake up in the dream, there's always a point, at least for me in my experiences, where my attentiveness fizzles out and then my consciousness of the experience also evaporates. And then I'm unconscious and then I wake up back in my body. So I've been thinking like maybe one of the purposes of the body for growing souls is for us to have this anchor that even if our attention fizzles out and we lose ourselves for a little bit, we're still here in this thing. So it's like a reference point that we can come back to as we're going through the training process to be able to hold our attention, hold our selfhood, even without that anchor of a body, maybe into some sort of spiritual immortality where we can exist indefinitely without the body, or go get a new body later if we want, but not lose what we've learned along the way and the wisdom of this training experience.
Yeah. And I think even like as I said, growing up in a spiritual community, part of that ideology or things that I was learning was a lot of, we did a lot of like past life stuff. We did a lot of soul stuff, soul journeying stuff. And I think it's all been really brilliant and it's been really informative and it's been really beautiful to explore that, especially starting at four, such a young age when you're still in that space organically within your own being, like the veil hasn't come down fully yet and things. But I also feel like one of the things I was told when I was little was like, oh, well, you know, this, wherever you were before this, like didn't have physical, like boundaries and things. Like my nickname as a child was Disaster Area. And it was partly because I would just run into everything. Like I would, like my mom joked that if there was an open field, I was the one who hit the tree, like with my head. And it was because I just didn't understand like these boundaries. I didn't understand like hard surfaces. And so part of that for me is informed. Like, I also feel like there's a point of being here is to learn this, like this experience for whatever reason is to learn there are walls and I'm sitting on something and it's holding my body. And, you know, just even like the deliciousness of food, like the pleasures that happen as well. Like, again, I don't know, but if I'm a soul floating in another realm, like, did they have delicious food that you can taste? Or is it just your breath air? Like, you know, like we don't know. But so for me, it kind of...
Me and my wife joke around, like, we incarnated to drive cars and drink coffee and, like, do that kind of, like, fun stuff.
Yeah, like, there's a certain, like, excitement now that I feel in this. And learning, like, you know, even the pleasure in the pains that happen. Again, because I don't know. I don't know what happens after in other realms. And... you know, even if there's parts of me that are on other dimensions and living different lives and things like that, it's like, well, consciously right now, this is what I know. So I'm going to work with that right now. I'm going to enjoy, you know, cleaning my chicken coop. Like I'm going to enjoy scooping their poop because why not? Like it's still, I sort of joke that I find that really meditative. Maybe because I'm, you know, a Virgo in Western astrology. So there's something about like nitpicking, detailing, cleaning up and like knowing like, oh, this is nice and fresh now.
Yep. It's super Virgo of you. Yeah. I kind of want to go into some of these tangents, but I'll take note of them because I reckon opening up the subject about human design, we might have quite a lot to talk about there. So maybe we should just go for that since that's sort of the headliner item. I've looked at human design. I've attended a talk that you and your Asmos did one time. I know I've talked to you guys about it 4 years ago, maybe some, but it seems like a good time for a refresher for me and for an introduction to other people that haven't been initiated into the human design path. It's super interesting. So can we talk about like what it is and the things that it combines and the purpose of it?
Yeah. So human design was given to us through somebody, this man who later became known as Ra Uruhu. And he says that sort of this voice came to him and he transcribed all this information. And then he started teaching it. He was on Ibiza. He started teaching it. And then he had a little bit of a, I don't want to do this. And he told all of his students to burn everything and get rid of everything. And he disappeared. And eventually he came back. And luckily, a lot of the students hadn't listened to him. And they still had, you know, certain notes or certain information. And so the process of sort of, again, putting it back together happened. And it takes into account four more esoteric sciences and then two more modern sciences. So it takes into account a 9 chakra Hindu system. It takes into the Tree of Life, Kabbalah, the I Ching. And then it takes in and Western astrology or astrology, I'll say, because there's two kinds of human design. So just like astrology, where there's Western astrology and Vedic astrology, there's tropical human design and there's sidereal human design. I personally just align more with the tropical, mainly because when I put in my information into the sidereal, it just wasn't accurate for my experience, and had that verified by multiple people. So I personally use the tropical, but and then it takes into modern science of the 64 DNA codons and neutrinos. And neutrinos are the smallest particle that holds mass or holds information. And these are particles that are flying through the entire universe all over constantly. And so part of your imprint from human design is the neutrino stream at the time of your birth, that information was imprinted on your being. And as I said, like, one of my favorite parts about human design is that it's very, very somatic based. It's very body based. There's also, just to say, you know, a lot of people also talk about gene keys with human design. I personally have not felt called to gene keys for whatever reason. I think it's brilliant and beautiful. It's more, what I've heard is that it's more esoteric in terms of it's more contemplative, more meditative. Rudd, who created gene keys, he learned from Ra about human design and everything, and then created gene keys from it. So they work sort of hand in hand together. So part of the human design being this like body-based system is that there's a conscious and an unconscious side to it. So there's a part of you that comes online around 88 days or 88 days before you're born. And that's more of the body-based part. That's going to be also more akin to like the unconscious. And then there's the other side, which is more of the personality side that comes online as soon as you're born. And so this combination between the two creates self. And human design can be thought of as sort of like a blueprint, like a, it's known as a body graph when you're looking at the actual, you know, chart that comes up when you put in your information. But some people refer to it as like the manual of yourself. So like when your car comes with a manual and it kind of describes all the parts and like what's, you know, how things sort of work and how it could, you know, work best and taking care of it and things like that. Human design has a feel of that. I don't love, I will say sort of putting the body and as akin to an automobile in terms of, I feel like that goes a little bit more into like the transhuman piece. However, I do think that human design can be used as, and how I really like to use it as like this, this is sort of like your original energy. This is how you originally were sort of created to be in the world and how your energy, how your being can maneuver through the world as with as much flow and as much ease as possible. And then the parts that I really love too is like the relational dynamic. So it takes into account that when you're with another person, there's things that are happening between the two designs happening. So that can also be like, they call it the conditioning process. So that happens just naturally by being around other people, but especially like your primary caregivers. So like one of the things I've done is gone back and really look at my mom and my dad's charts and sort of see how my chart might have been influenced or might have like taken on certain conditionings through those relationships, and in no negative way, just observing like this is just human nature, that of course we don't live in these, you know, vacuum sealed bubbles where we're completely void of anyone else. We live in these, you know, relationships, dynamics, energy, communications. And so I love that that is sort of brought into the field. And then I'll say my favorite part of human design is that it's known as the science of differentiation. So when I'm saying like, when you look at your body graph, it's different from everyone else. So it really takes into the uniqueness of your unique being, your soul, how you were designed, and really flies in the face of a lot of dogmas around like everyone's supposed to do this or everyone can, you know, benefit from that. And then also in terms of the comparison game, like I could be, you know, looking at somebody online and be like, oh, well, they, you know, X, Y, and Z, why can't I, blah, 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 blah. And it's like, well, I'm literally designed differently. So like the way that they did A, B, and C, and D and got to E, like that doesn't necessarily work for me. So who am I? How does my energy work? How does my system work?
It's kind of like there's 26 letters in the alphabet, but every story told using those 26 letters is absolutely different and unique with infinite possible variations and permutations. Absolutely no copies one to the other, yet it's built with the same components. I think that's so cool. And I take that approach with tuning as well, that yes, we're all created out of these different energy centers or this energetic anatomy. And it's sort of like painting a picture. Each human being is composed of those seven primary colors, but it's a completely different picture every time. It's amazing how nature has that capacity to shift around building blocks and timing in order to create something different every time. Even, you know, even two leaves off the same tree are not the same. That's super cool to me.
Yeah, absolutely. And even in that, it's like two people will have, you know, similarities, or they'll have the same channels, or they'll have the same gates or certain things like that. And it's like, it will present very, very differently, regardless, because it's in the whole, it's taking into the whole account of somebody's chart. And again, also taking into account all of the conditionings that we've been part of. So even if you have similar chart to somebody, you probably had different parents, or you had different relationships, or you've had different things that have informed how you're going to present. So I just love that process. And that's where I also bring in a lot more of like the trauma work and the somatic work and stuff like that to really help all of that move at the same time within someone.
I'm wanting to know now, what are some of the different types of takeaways and actionable items that somebody would get out of a human design reading with you?
Yeah. So the main, there's sort of like main parts, because human design, like any of these systems, it can go deep and deep and deep and deep and deep. And you can get into sort of like really nuanced, really specific pieces. And at the same time, and Ra even talked about this, like the larger pieces are kind of what has to happen first before any of the other stuff makes sense. So like one of the main things is type. So there's five main types in human design, and this really navigates a lot about how you are going to function in the world best. So there's generators. So manifesting generators and generators are what's known as energy types together. They're grouped together, and they're about 70% of the population. And what that means is that there's a certain center called the sacral center that is defined within your chart. And it's like this energizer bunny. And it's like the go, 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 go. And you guys, you're a manifesting generator. So I'll say you guys.
I'm definitely go, go, go type.
Yeah. Which is beautiful. So it's really like you guys are this energy on the planet. So I kind of say that like, the manifesting generators and the generators are like the sunshine on the planet, because the other 30% of us are sort of like non-energy types. Direct manifestors are kind of, just to be clear, like they're not really non-energy types, but they don't have a sacral center. So, but you guys, you, this generator, manifesting generator group, that's 70% of the population, you guys are all designed to respond to life, respond to what's happening around you, and respond with your yeses and nos on what's correct for you. and how you know, like, your sort of percentage of how attuned am I with this is if you're feeling more satisfaction in your life or you're feeling more frustration in your life. So these are actionable things where you can really feel inside your own being, like, where am I at in this? Like, do I have like 80% satisfaction and only 20% frustration? That's really good. Do I have 80% frustration and 20% satisfaction? Are you really listening to yourself? Where we need to tweak that? This also brings in a lot of like self-esteem stuff and self-confidence of like, do you feel confident enough to give your true answers, you know, in the face of potentially upsetting someone? Okay, what's the conditioning around that? And how can we get more in tune with your answers?
I'll just say, for me, reflecting on this, when I have a sense of satisfaction that's strong, I can pretty much make anything happen that I want to make happen.
Yes.
Even just almost like willing it into being. But if there's an option for me that comes up or a commitment and I'm not satisfied with it, or I don't expect to be satisfied by it, it's like almost impossible to get myself to even engage with it. I usually just dip.
Yeah. But one, that's because you're in tune with yourself and you've done a lot of self work. There's a lot of people who can't feel that. And they've been a lot of generators have been conditioned to do for others, and that their worth lies in what they're doing for others. And so a lot of generator types, there's a lot of frustration because they're not doing what they want to do. They're not responding authentically from them. They're saying like, sure, I can do that because I have the energy to do it. So they can, but do you really want to? And I truly believe that if there were more generators on this planet who were taught and encouraged to really go for what they want, like be honest with their answers, we would have a very, very different planet or world, realm, whatever. Like, we would have a very different experience because the other 30% of us are being affected by that. Like, I learned.
So if you're one of these types, just take my motto to heart. If it ain't a hell yes, it's a hell no.
Yes. Yes.
You can live that way. It's actually the best way to go.
Yes. And I will say, so another actionable piece about human design is that everybody has an authority. So your authority is your unique way of making decisions. So I'll go into that in a minute, but just to go over the other types. So manifesting generators and generators are energy types. They have that sacral defined, but they are different. So manifesting generators have this experience where they're responding to life, but then once they have that authentic response, then they move more into a manifestor energy, which is more about initiating. So they kind of get to sort of skirt both, but they have to remember that they're generators first. And then the manifestors is their own group. It's about 8% of the population. And these are the only designed who are designed to initiate. So they're really designed to like bring in the new information, what's happening, bring in a new idea, and then they put it forth, but they're not necessarily the ones who are supposed to be the ones like doing it, if that makes sense. They're more the idea, the initiation of it. Then there's projectors. So I'm a projector. I'm what's known as a 3-5 emotional projector. So projectors were about 20% of the population, and we're known as sort of like the guides because we have to wait to be recognized and invited. So like even Chance, we were, you know, seeing each other for our sessions and things like that for biofield tuning. And then you were like, hey, I know you're into this thing called human design. Do you want to come on and do a podcast on it? Like that's being recognized. Oh, I know you do this thing. And then invited, would you like to come on and talk about this? Right? So projectors have this interesting dynamic of we have to wait for that. We have to wait for the other to see us. And then we can come in and sort of give guidance or give information.
So are you saying that for projectors, if they try to invite themselves to a party, they have a bad time at the party or they get let down?
It can be. So our thing, when I said, you know, the strategy of satisfaction and frustration, ours is success and bitterness. So I just may be bitter if I'm, you know, saying yes to things. But it's also, so all of these things, so even just to back up with the generator types, each type has a different aura around them. So generators have this like enveloping aura. So it's kind of this like, come into me, feel, I want to, you know, put my arms around everything and then respond to it as it's like in my field. And that's really for generators, for them to be able to feel into like, what is my organic response to this thing? Whatever it is, whatever I'm being asked to do, whatever's coming into my field, responding to it. And again, that's so that you're not just doing for others. It's so that you're responding and doing what is aligned for you. For manifestors, their aura is fixed and repelling. So a lot of people take that negatively, but it's really about protecting, again, their own system. They're designed to initiate, and their aura is basically sort of this, it's sort of like a get on board or get out of my way. I'm making something happen. You can either help me or get out of my way kind of feel to them. And then the projectors were penetrating with our aura. So part of the projectors being known as guides and needing to be invited is that, especially with generators, our energy penetrates the generator and then we feel deeply into them. And then our genius is to be able to guide their energy because we are a quote unquote non-energy type. So we learn how to be efficient with things. So I joke, like one of Yerasimos, my husband, he's a generator, as you know. And it was like within the first month of living together or something. And I was sitting on the couch reading and we had stairs in our place and he went up and down the stairs like 7 times in an hour. And I eventually put down my book and I'm like, I'm exhausted watching you. Like, what are you doing? Because for me and my energy, that's not efficient. Like, I'm going to go up, I'm going to get everything that I could possibly need for the day and come down. And that's just sort of like where our genius is and how can I be efficient with my energy? So with this penetrating aura and why I need to wait to be invited is that my energy is going into the other. How like, you know, creepy is that if it's not invited? Like, think about that. Like, it's like, no, I want my energy to be invited in and then I can give guidance. I can't just go around and like, you know, putting my field into everyone around me, especially if they don't want it. All I'm going to get is resistance.
So like a projector type could potentially have to overcome a shadow quality of being like controlling or manipulative more than the 100%. Average person.
Yes. Because our thing is, oh, we can see what you need to be doing. So let me just tell you. And it's like, you know, that's where the bitterness is going to come in. If I'm doing that too much, you know, that's, it's just going to be resisted. And I'm going to get, you know, bitter and burnt out kind of feel. And so again, that's where that aura type or that way of being in the world of waiting to be invited is protecting my energy. I don't want to be doing that to everybody. I don't have the energy to be doing that to everybody. It's only for the people who are my people to do that with. So then we have the fifth type, which is a reflector. They're about 1% of the population. And a reflector, their aura is sampling. And when you look at a reflector's chart, I've only known 3 or 4 sort of consciously, like knew, oh, you're a reflector, having seen their charts.
I met one last weekend. Interesting.
You did?
Yeah.
Yeah.
It was pretty cool.
They're fun. They're super fun because it's like rare and interesting. But when you look at their chart, so in a chart, usually there's going to be certain things colored in and certain things that are white. Where there's color is where there's definition. So that's like where you have access to this energy at all times. Whereas where it's white is where you're more open. So you're more apt to be conditioned in those spaces. And you'll see on a chart that there's 9 sort of big shapes. Those are the centers. And then there's going to be numbers in there and sort of lines that go between all of these big shapes. And in those, that's known as a gate or a channel. A gate if you have one side, a channel if you have the full. And in a full channel, that lights up 2 of the big shapes. Sorry, it's hard to explain this without a visual, but hopefully you're following me. But most people, so unless you're a reflector type, you will have some of these large shapes colored in, meaning that you have definition there. A reflector does not. So all of their centers, their big shapes, are white. So they have gates, but no full channels. And so they're really like ruled by the moon. They're a really interesting field, and their job is to reflect society back to itself. So when you're speaking to a reflector, there's also this piece of like you're speaking to yourself. And so oftentimes they can feel kind of like, I kind of joke, that's kind of ephemeral. Like you kind of can't like hold on to something within them sometimes because they're sort of so open, and their aura with that sampling thing, they're sampling you when you're in aura with them. And then they move to the next person, they sample them because they're designed really to just be feeling into all different aspects. Does that make sense? Cool. So those are the 5 main types and sort of the aura, like how they work in the world. And their sort of their job, if you will, or like what they're designed to do. And then you have, as you brought it up, that authority piece. So authority is probably, I love it in human design because I feel like it's so practical. Like it's very, clearly how you specifically are meant to make decisions. So, and especially with human design being a body-based system, there actually isn't a single person who's designed to make decisions from their mind. So most of us are, you know, taught that or brought up with that, like be logical, be thinking about everything, you know, weigh your pros and cons, all of that. And while that's good, that's not actually how in human design you would make a final decision. So there's a
that's bunch cool. Of, I, you know, what, yeah. To me, being able to ask my body direct questions and get at least yes or no answers consistently and confidently, it's life changing. Yeah. Because isn't that one of the hardest parts about life is what do I want? What do I actually want? And because the conscious mind is only holding on to a sliver of the question at any given moment. So to be able to just kind of tap into the totality of yourself and then trust what bounces back at you, I feel like it's, I don't know anything better than that. I rely on it constantly from big questions down to like, what should I eat for lunch?
Yeah, absolutely. And as a generator type, as a manifesting generator, that's actually one of the ways that I will coach people on how to start getting in tune with their responses if they have been trained out of them a lot of the times, because it's usually a pretty like low stakes way of starting to play with it and starting to actually feel yourself. And what's interesting is, I'm just going to check your chart really fast because I think I remember this. Yeah, you actually have an interesting chart in terms of multiple awareness centers that you have defined. And I won't go too deeply into it for you personally, but what happens is there's kind of like this filtering system for making decisions when you have multiple of these awareness centers defined. So for one of them, it's the spleen center. So if somebody has the left side triangle colored in, that's known as the spleen center. And it's really about like safety. So the nervous system is always scanning, or not the nervous system, just because I talk about the nervous system a lot, that just came in. But the spleen center is always scanning for like safety. And so I joke with people who have that as their authority is that you could be walking down the street in New York City and look down a dark alley and know without a doubt if you are safe or not to go down there. Whereas for me, I don't have the spleen center defined. So any dark alley I look down, I'm like, I don't know. Is this safe? Is this not safe?
So that's almost like instinctual, right?
Yes. Yeah, so the spleen authority is instinct, and it's that quiet. So
are you telling me I have spider sense?
Yes, you do.
Okay, cool.
You do.
Just checking.
And for people who have that as their thing, I know people who have, you know, really skirted pretty potentially horrific experiences by listening to that. So when that's your authority, it's like the spleen is also known as it sort of like speaks once. So it gives you the answer once. And if you miss it or you're conditioned to go into the head, it's like it gets sort of like fuzzy. So it's kind of
that's interesting too, because I've learned for myself that I'm always better off if I just go with my first gut instinct. First answer is the best answer. And that's what I do. I don't know. I don't think about it at all. Just whatever the first answer that comes to my mind is, I go with that. And
yeah,
I think I've pretty much avoided horrific experiences in my life overall, way more than the average person. I just thought I was lucky.
I will say, just because we're going to get there, that's not your authority. So you have it defined, but it's not your ultimate authority. So it's to take into consideration. So it's the first of the filters for you of like safe, not safe. Or I even say like, you know, if somebody walks into a party and is like, I don't want to be here, like turn around and leave. And that's where that like self-esteem, self-confidence piece comes in of like, can you trust yourself and also be willing to stand in it of like, I don't need to explain this to anybody. I'm not supposed to be here. You know, and so when that's your authority, you really need to sort of build that up within yourself where you can be honest with that and hold it. Because
so with that. People that are undefined in this area, do they do well with maybe having someone that they trust that is more defined in that way that they sort of follow their lead?
It can't. So we'll go through the different authorities. So they'll just have a different authority. And so that's how they make decisions. But for those, you know, safe, not safe feelings. Yeah. I mean, I have certain friends who have the spleen defined and I'll ask them, like, you know, you let me know if while we're driving, you get any kind of like, you know, little like spidey sense up the back of your neck that we should turn even when the GPS says not to. You know, you let me know because I don't have access to that at all times since I don't have it defined. So it's sort of like I'm open, you know, if you want to say like, hey, I just got this field, like we shouldn't eat this food. I'm going to listen to that and be like, cool, let's not eat the food right now. So that's one of the authorities is the spleen center. Then we come over to that sacral center. So like I said, all generator types, meaning a generator and manifesting generators have this center, this sacral center defined. Again, this doesn't mean that it's your authority. It just means that you have access to it. So by the filter system, I mean, like it's going to go through your spleen first, and then it's going to come to your sacral. You're not sacral authority. So just so you know, we'll get there. I'm going to go to that one next. But the sacral center, and you have access to this. So that's what I mean by the filtering system. You still have access to this. And anybody who's a generator type has access to this. It's a gut instinct. For the sacral. So, and I even say, you know, a lot of kids have been trained out of their original noises and taught to say yes or no. Like the phrase of, you know, use your words, say yes or no. That's, you know, not in a negative way, but that's conditioning. And that's actually getting somebody out of tune with their authentic response. So the gut response is going to usually be more of a noise. So an you know, and it's usually for generators because of this energy, it's usually going to manifest in some sort of physical representation. So like the body moving forward or the body moving back. Or my favorite thing as a non-generator type is when a generator gets really excited and the whole body expands, like the arms just fly up into the air and it's like everything's lit up and a go. Right. So it's kind of this like juicy energy that happens through their system. So when you have that sacral center as your authority, it is that getting back in tune with what's your noise. What's your response type? How does it come forward for you naturally? And as I said, I tell people to start going through this with like foods or go to their refrigerator and point at things. And not to say like whatever you point at and you get an that's what you should eat, because you could come up with some, you know, odd combinations that could be good. But just to practice with a low cost, low stakes environment, right? But this is really, and it's a response in the now. So the sacral center has in the moment access to yes or no. In the moment. So that's going to be a big difference as we move over to emotional authority. So that's going to be the triangle on the right side of the chart. If that is defined, that trumps all other authorities. So again, even as I said for you, you have sacral definition, you have spleen definition, but your authority is the emotional center. So it's that filtering system where it will go through the spleen first and it's like the open weave. And then you come to the sacral center and the weave's going to get a little bit tighter. And then for you, it's waiting for the emotional center for the actual, like the full yes, no. So I'm a projector, emotional projector, meaning that my authority is the emotional center as well. And the emotional center exists on a wave. So think of emotions as, you know, it's energy moving through the system. So the emotional center being defined means that it's the system sort of works on this natural wave always happening within our system. So we may be on a low and we don't need to have a reason for it. It's just where our system's at. And then we could be on a high and we don't have to have a reason for it. It's just existing with it. Part of the experience of being an emotionally defined person and having this as your authority is surfing the waves. So instead of sort of being thrown around and crashed around in the waves, like learning how to surf them in our system. But also our authority is waiting. So for the emotional authority, there isn't clarity in the now. There's clarity over time, because I may want to say yes to something, but I'm on a high of a wave. On the high of a wave, I pretty much want to say yes to everything because everything feels great. When I'm on the low of a wave, I pretty much want to say no to everything besides from like sitting on the couch. It's like, so it's kind of getting in tune with like, what is my wave and how do I respond accordingly? So even when I have people reach out or want to schedule things or something, I always take a bit of time to feel into when I want to schedule or how that will work for me, especially that's, because
what's interesting about this is for me, I think I am familiar with riding that wave, but it doesn't feel so emotional to me per se. Yeah. But it is like an enthusiasm thing. My enthusiasm does have, I don't know, yeah. my moon's in Libra, right? So okay. I'm like emotionally usually pretty even keel at all times, even if I'm on an up or down of the energy wave. Mm-hmm. But one thing I've had to account for with myself and just accept and work with instead of being upset at myself over is the comparison between my productivity on the high of the wave versus the low of the wave. And now I just enjoy the low part of the wave for the rejuvenation and the rest and the chilling out that is basically necessary. And then just rock and roll on the high of the wave and cheer myself on when I'm there. But you know, earlier in life, when I would be on the low part of the wave, I would just be thinking about but you just came off of this total crushing, you know, crush-a-thon. Why can't you keep it up? What's wrong with you? And I'd have some hard self-talk, and then that would make the low part of the wave not fun. And I'd just be constantly recriminating. But yeah, now I just go with it. So sounds like I'm kind of in tune with what you're talking about already.
Yeah. And even, I mean, just because I did look at your chart, so I know your wave. And there are, so each channel off of the emotional center is going to have a different flavor of wave with it. We actually have the same channel, the 3740, which goes from the emotional center to the ego center or the heart center. It's a little, the little triangle. That's what's known as a ratchet wave. I don't know if you'll, resonate with this, but like, it kind of like, it goes up and up, and it kind of like has little plateaus, and then it'll kind of plummet down. And then jump back up. So I joke because there's times when it's like, I know that I'm reaching sort of the top of my wave. And so I know the low is going to come kind of thing, but I have to go through the wave anyway. So I joke sometimes it'll be like, I'm fine. I'm not fine. And it's just becoming okay with that. As you said, like the biggest part of the emotional wave is trying to resist it. That's where you're going to run into the biggest issues. I will say for generators, I think it's easier to sort of do that, like pretend when you're not on the high of the wave, or to sort of pretend like, you know, everything's good within you, because you have that juicy sacral center that can kind of override and give you that energy. Whereas for me as a projector, I don't have that sacral center. So it's really hard for me to kind of like, I'm fine, I'm great, like when I'm not. There isn't a ton of like that resource there. And part of being a projector is that I can tune into the sacrals around me and sort of ride their wave. But I know that I can't do that for too long. Like I know that there is like a give and take with that, if that makes sense. Like if I'm bypassing my own natural energy, I will have to sort of like repay that at some point kind of thing in my own system. So it's really about just knowing, like I find human design so empowering because it's really good. It's just good for me to know, like there's nothing wrong with me. That I don't have the same sacral go, go, go energizer bunny as the generator, as my generator husband. I'm literally designed differently. But then it's the empowering period is like, how do I take care of myself in the best way possible? How do I get the rest that I need? How do I get the nourishment that I need? How can I let go of, you know, the not self theme of my worth is based on how much I do. Versus like just being myself. And then that riding the wave of like, I even have it now with like certain friends who know this and stuff. It's like, we'll have, you know, plans or whatever. It's like, cool. Can we check in the morning? Cause like, you know, on the high, I might've said like, yeah, I'd love to do that 10 mile hike. But like, if I wake up and I'm on a low, it's like, how can I be as honest as possible? So how can I be as self-aware and take responsibility for myself as possible and call up and be like, hey, just so you know, I'm actually kind of on a low of my wave right now. Are you cool with that? Do you want to be around that? Are you cool with maybe just like hanging out and drinking tea instead of going on this crazy hike? But it's also, so a big thing that's happening in human design is it says that there's basically like 400 year long cycles. And we've been in one cycle that is switching in 2027. And that switch is happening within the emotional center. And so I think the cusp right now for all of us, because it's about 50% of the population that's emotional definition, meaning that they also have that as their authority, and 50% that aren't. So remember how I talked a little bit about, or just touched on the relational dynamics where you're defined, you have that energy that you're putting out consistently in the world. Where you have white in your chart is where you're more apt to take in the energies around you. So what's happening right now with this 50-50% of the population is that there's a lot of emotional authority people out here without emotional awareness, with pretty low emotional intelligence, I'll say, about themselves. And what happens is that then we're just out in the world and we're affecting those who don't have it defined, who don't have emotional definition. And what ends up happening is the emotional wave goes into that other person, and that other person actually amplifies it. So if I'm like, oh, I'm just, you know, I'm feeling like 5% down, if I'm not honest about it and sort of taking that as my own energy, they can feel that, but they feel it at 50% because it's times 10. So these are people who are like really, really emotionally sensitive to those around them. And it's really the onus of the emotional defined people to be as self-aware as possible. So again, when I'm around somebody and if I'm on a low or I'm, you know, something's going on in my wave, it's like, I want to be as honest as possible and be like, hey, just so you know, I'm feeling a little frustrated today, or I'm feeling a little off today, or something like that, because it pulls my energy back into myself. I'm responsible for that. They are not. If another practical thing, if you look at your chart and you don't have emotional definition, one of the things I really love to teach clients is if you all of a sudden, so this is the trigger of all of a sudden or out of nowhere, feel a big emotion. Because people who don't have emotional definition, you still have emotions. It's still life. We're still humans. But it's just not like you don't exist on this consistent wave. But to ask, like, if you all of a sudden have this experience or all out of the blue or feeling something, ask your body, is this mine? And your body will alter. Your body will sort of go like, oh no, I don't actually have to process that energy the way that I was. It's also like just for you psychologically to know like, oh, that's not actually mine. I'm just taking on somebody else's energy kind of thing and not over-identifying with it. So those are some pieces. Then there's other authorities. So there's...
Actually, Sophie, I want to pause you on. I want to keep going with the authorities, but we're at a good point to do our transition between the hours, if that's cool.
Yeah.
I'm enjoying this a lot. It's causing me to reflect back on times in my life where, you know, just the interactions and relationship going down sort of the way you're describing and me not understanding myself the way that I do now. It's pretty cool. But I think the authority piece might be the greatest aspect of human design overall. If there was one takeaway for somebody to investigate, dig into, and then integrate into their knowledge about themselves, even if they didn't go full-fledged, you know, learn every bit and piece of this very intricate system, I think the emotional authority, or not emotional, but just authority center for them as an individual is very helpful to grasp. But yeah, we'll do our transition to hour two. But if you don't mind, because you're one of my favorite regulars in Biofield Tuning, I was wondering if you could just give a little bit about the experience, not to give personal, you know, information about what we get into in sessions, but maybe just like how Biofield Tuning resonates to your overall knowledge about how the body, mind, and emotional body all kind of work, body, mind, spirit system, and how we can access that and, you know, symptoms as symbols. And because I think we've had some extremely profound sessions, and I consider you one of the top, you know, success stories, honestly.
Thanks. I've loved our sessions. And I think a big piece is, as I was saying, I've done a lot of work, especially even starting at such a young age at like 4, but a lot of it was more I don't want to say esoteric, but more in sort of like past life or more esoteric states. And while I had worked on things, there was still a body piece that I feel like biofield tuning has been able to get to reach in different ways that were still lingering. So even if there had been work on a certain subject, I feel like there was like still residue. And I feel like biofield tuning was able to sort of feel that because of the combination of everything, feel it in my field, feel it in my body, and then go in and just sort of take out those lingering pieces of everything. Because even like the body work and stuff, like I feel like that's being more present in terms of hasn't been doing a lot of more of the past stuff. And that's been the big thing that I have sort of felt with and noticed with biofield tuning, that I feel like it's very, very subtle in what it picks up and what it catches, if you will, and then what it's able to move through and clear out of the system as well. And then I just think that you're a brilliant practitioner. I mean, we haven't gotten into it, but you are the left angle cross of healing as your incarnation cross in human design. So I definitely think this is a big piece of your, you know, purpose, your being here, is you're really in tune with that. And you just have a really beautiful way of bringing that energy forward. So.
Thank you. That's cool. We'll talk more about some of the specifics of my chart, using me as an example for how reading a chart might get information in part two. But before we head over there, thank you again for the kind words. It's awesome what our tuning sessions have been able to help you achieve for yourself. It's really you that's doing it. I'm just pointing to the flashlight at some of the corners that were more obscure. But what's important now is just for you to let people know how they might learn more or connect with you personally or work with you, whatever you want to, you know, put out to the audience.
Cool. Yeah. So my personal website is SophieFletcherPhD.com. And that's where you can also message me through that website. So I actually oddly don't have human design specifically listed on there, but if you reach out through there, I do human design readings. I do somatic experiencing and, you know, different kinds of coaching, trauma work, somatic based work, as well as body work. And then I also hold a retreat at our home in Topanga twice a year. It's called Back to You. I do it with a friend of mine, and it's really, we incorporate human design. We incorporate a lot of different modalities of like the breath work and energy clearing techniques, and also this thing called NeuroOptimal, which is like a brain training machine, but it doesn't give any input. So it's really just your own brain being able to see itself and then make decisions for itself. I'm really a big advocate of that, that it's yourself, as you said, it's yourself doing the healing. It's yourself making the choices. I'm just supporting that in whatever way I can. And then I'm part of Yerasmos and his business partner, Joel. They have the Here for the Truth podcast, but they also have a group coaching program.
Friends of the Truth.
And a membership community, Friends of the Truth. So the group coaching is Rise Above the Herd. And I am a coach in there specifically based in nervous system work. And then in their membership community, Friends of the Truth, I do monthly nervous system focused calls in there as well. So if you want to, you know, work with me or sort of, you know, get into this work, but don't want to do more intensive, like one-on-one stuff or things, that can be a really brilliant way. And also, I mean, just to, obviously I'm biased, but I think Yerasmos is absolutely freaking incredible. And what him and Joel have created, you know, I love it. That's why I'm part of it, is I really support what they're doing and bringing forth. And so far, yeah, that's pretty much what I'm up to.
It's really cool. Yeah. The membership and coaching program that Joel and Yerasmos have, I think you go to hereforthetruth.com, right? Mm-hmm. For that and all, information on all the possibilities. But I think there's a lot of bang for the buck in terms of what you get access to when you join that. And it's constantly doing more programs and seminars. I even did one.
Yeah. I mean, yours is incredible because it is, they're really good at like bringing in their podcast, you know, people that they've had on the podcast to give more personal information or give, you know, a teaching or things like that. So you really get to know people on a deeper level, which I love.
Yep. Very synergistic. But all right, we'll head over to part two. Thanks for coming on and looking forward to learning more about these different authority centers and what else we can grasp about human design. Pretty cool stuff. Thank you, Sophie.
Yeah, thank you.
Yo, everybody, thanks for tuning in. Had a really good time with Sophie. We're pretty good friends at this point. I think she's one of the top repeat tuning collaborators. So there's that. You kind of develop a rapport when you've combed through or forked through people's entire life timeline a few times. So saying that lets me know that she's a really great person. And thus I'm quite enthused to be able to bring her onto the platform and teach us about this human design system. It is a little complex, but I'm not worried about that in terms of how the audience, you guys, receive it, because I happen to be 100% confident that this is the advanced class. This is the group of people that listen to this show, and I'm so thankful for that, that if there's something they don't understand, they continue on through the information if they like the energy and the vibe and intention behind it, and they let what clicks click and what other seeds are planted just blossom when they will, and they go do their own research on the questions that they have. And so I trust you guys are going to be doing that if you find this interesting. At the very least, looking up your own chart and seeing where things fall for you and what you can intuitively grasp from it. Before I go further in talking about my human design thoughts, I better just let you guys know what's up on the Plus Extension side. If you're one of the free listeners, that you can get the second part on Rockfin or on Patreon or on YouTube through the membership options of all three of those platforms. It's kind of cool to have three now. And if you like one, but not the other, you can just do the one. Or you can be like certain people who, for whatever reason, are signed up on more than one way and just supported me double. I don't mind. Really appreciate the support, actually. But in the Plus extension, which you can find linked in the show notes in terms of how to access it, we got further into the idea of the incarnation cross and like the broad stroke life theme that can be indicated in your human design chart. That was pretty interesting, at least for me. I don't know how many there are. Well, she said there were 192, but I don't know how like general those are or how specific they are. So I'd really like to hear from people maybe in the Telegram chat what they come up with in their incarnation cross, what their life theme is, and if that seems to fit or resonate, because that's really important. In my book, if you are straying from your intention for incarnation too far, that's what really gets you sick and potentially even kills you. I think that the ultimate healing is being in full confidence and enthusiastic alignment with what you set out to do in this life in the waiting room before you came into a body. But hey, I don't know. Secondly, we talked about in the Plus extension, you know, Sophie's thoughts and experience on working with the nervous system to analyze and potentially alter adaptive conditioning from youth. We discussed why celebrating our differences actually aligns us with source consciousness. We talked about the transition, a potential transition between 7 to 9 chakra systems for human beings. Jury's still out on that for me, but I kind of look at the chakras as a language anyway. So it's just a more nuanced language, and more nuance is usually better with language. So I could see why that would be useful. And I'm going to look into it further and see how that might apply to, you know, biofield tuning. I already see more than 7 chakras in biofield tuning anyway. We talked about the different authority centers beyond the ones that we had discussed in the free hour and what their qualities are, and took into account a further understanding of defined versus undefined qualities in your chart, and a lot of close-up looks at I Ching aspects to the human design, which is fun for me. I love the I Ching. Talked about what it means to be a split definition versus single definition, and how human design informs us about what different people connect to and complete in one another. So all that and a lot more There's definitely other questions I would love to get into with her. Maybe we should bring her on for like a Q&A on a Vibrant. I think that sounds fun. If just one person tells me they want that, I'll do it. Or invite Sophie on. She needs to be invited, I guess, as a projector. We'll probably do it anyway. I'm always looking for a good Vibrant. So things that I didn't ask that I would like to talk about, and this would be more on the opinion level, is this guy, Ra Uruhu, who is the channeler of human design. I want to know, like, what was the entity or what, like, that he channeled it from? Or did it describe itself or name itself? Who was it? Did he try to ditch human design because he felt like he was being tricked? Because in my experience with channeled material, it often is like about half awesome and maybe about half confusing or even intentionally tricky. And I don't know, but I think with all these things, it's great to just use your own lens of discernment. And with human design, it's like, it's very complex. And I think part of it's, that's part of its, blessing and curse, that if you try to get too far into the weeds of like, what's the right way to interpret this? What does it mean according to the authority in the field? Maybe that's actually not so good for what the benefits of human design as a system really are. Because some of the, like, think about the sidereal versus tropical astrology. Some of the best astrologers are in one camp or the other, yet you could go get a reading with one or the other, and they're going to be super spot on about describing aspects of your life and personality, despite being in completely different systems or vastly different systems. And I think that, you know, that speaks to the divinatory nature of astrology. And I want to keep that in the forefront of our minds with human design, so that maybe we don't have to get so hung up on beyond, you know, getting the chart itself and that configuration to look at. We don't have to get so hung up on what's the right and perfect way to interpret this. And instead, go into it yourself and let your own intuition guide you to what this means. I got a lot out of doing it that way when I was looking at my HD chart. Does that make sense? That even if there were some inconsistencies or incorrect things about any particular system, that when we use that as an intellectual scaffolding or language through which our intuition can speak to us and give us insight, then those little incongruent aspects don't matter as much, because ultimately we're just using it as a diving board to leap into the well of our own deep inner knowing, right? You follow? So I think human design has definitely got potential for that. Other things I wanted to know about would be like, well, definitely how are neutrinos accounted for with human design? I'm sorry. I bet somebody out there was like, why didn't you ask about the neutrinos? And I meant to, but we just kind of were in the flow of other things and having a good time. And honestly, maybe that's not even worth it. Like, I don't know about particles anyway. Like, I don't know how much I believe in all that infinitesimally tiny particles and whatever. I'm not so much about like the external conditions shaping the inner world of the person. I think the inner world shapes the outer world. But hey, maybe that's why I left neutrino question at the door. I am curious about it though, so don't get me wrong. Maybe that'll come up in the future. Also, like a lot of the other modalities that she described, especially the meridian therapies, and what exactly is spiritual psychology and what is the somatic experiencing process? So if you like Sophie, maybe go follow her around the internet and see other interviews she's done, and maybe you hear about those things. But I had a great time, and I hope you guys did too. Appreciate all the support I've been receiving from y'all lately. I think since the Inner World podcast from subscribers only launched, I've seen the best surge of new members ever in a short amount of time. And so I love that. Don't have one this week, but we'll cook one up next. And now that I see, you know, now that I understand better my emotional authority, as Sophie helps me comprehend in this talk, I see how that like ratchet wave of my energy can sometimes peak, but then after the peak, it's like boom, and it just drops. And so around the time of like my birthday, that dropped. So I was on a huge wave. We were doing we did three of those Inner World shows in 3 weeks, and then after that I just needed a chill week where I just kind of kept it to the old regularly scheduled program. And I think that's fine. And I appreciate being able to get the reflection about the emotional energy or emotional authority center in human design that, I just tend to operate that way, where there's a peak and then a crash. And that way the crash isn't like a crash and burn. It's more like a pause and catch your breath and reflect and enjoy what you did on the peak. I like that. So systems of this nature, they can really give you a hand in being easier on yourself, understanding your strengths, compensating for weaknesses or making weaknesses not weak, so much weaknesses anymore, so they don't sabotage you and you just flow through them. I like that a lot. If you guys are curious about some biofield tuning, you know what to do. Email me, chance@interversepodcast.com. It was a really nice endorsement from Sophie there. She is an awesome client. She's the perfect example of the type of individual that can get a lot out of tuning. Somebody that's ready to be radically self-honest and enthusiastic about the process and has something that they want to work on and shift in mind already. Although you can do it without a specific need and we'll still dig into some new energy for you to access. Sometimes those are great sessions actually. So you can also go to my website, interversepodcast.com/sound-healing. If you want to learn more about what it is and see what it takes to get a booking set up with me, I run about 4 to 5 weeks into the future. So if you do want to get one relatively soon, you know, sooner than later, booking will get you sooner than later on my schedule. And there's other ways to support the show. Lots of them, actually. So many that I got to check the list. Typica New Herbs, use the Interverse code at checkout. Amazing products there. InterverseMerch.com. You can just donate on Cash App, $Chance Garten. Oregonite, brand new affiliate there, Oregon-ite.com. All of this is linked in the show notes. That's also a coupon code, Interverse. Great products there. I love the Oregonite that I got from Isaac. Awesome dude. You can get the Spirit World series on audiobook narrated by me. And I'm just laughing because after I just brought that up and I'm thinking about, I almost never get like trolly mean comments. And I think that speaks to the vibe we cultivate here and the fact that I just ban people instantly when they're an asshole. But I did get this comment randomly on a Rockfin post the other day that was like, Chance, why did you narrate Terminalia like a fucking robot? You're so gay. And I just laughed and banned them, but it gave me a chuckle. So I don't know why that just came into my mind. Yeah, I do have an audiobook voice, but I think it's pretty cool. Dylan was good with it. He's the author. So all that. There's also Clive DeCarl. You can check the link in the show notes for the affiliate link to Clive's shop. Get some vitamin C, magnesium, or other great products. And then there's the AquaCure. Interverse as a coupon code for that. That is a nice investment if you want some electricity in your hydrogen, in your water. Good stuff. I'm enjoying using that every day still. And with that, I'm going to peace out. Got a lot of great content on the horizon for the channel. And I'm glad you guys are along for the ride. Definitely go say hi to Sophie on Instagram. Tell her thanks for coming on the show. And we will see you guys on the next one. Much love. I don't know why I said we. It's just me. But me and all the people inside me. All right. Bye-bye.